It's been a little while since we've had Ellen Brown on. EllenBrown.com is her website, and she's a prolific writer, fairly prolific. And her new book is what we're mainly going to discuss, Banking on the People. And it's probably long overdue, I would say, but we're being forced to have this discussion now more than ever. What are we transitioning to? Certainly the Fed is talking about some kind of transition. Certainly other people like Ellen have certain ideas. Ellen is a trade lawyer from California, Berkeley. And she's going to be here and talk about her new book, Banking on the People. Excited to have her. Ellen, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Thanks. Great to talk to you.
How did a lawyer turn into a banking expert?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I did commercial law for 10 years in Los Angeles, and we did represent some banks. But then my ex-husband burned out on Beverly Hills Law and decided she wanted to go in the Foreign Service. So we went abroad for 11 years, and we have two kids. And so that gave me a chance to write. And at first I wrote on alternative health care, which is what I'd written my law review article on, legal restrictions on unorthodox medical treatment in California. And then eventually I wound up representing an alternative cancer therapist in Tijuana. And in the course of that, seeing the trial, and it just looked totally, it was totally corrupt.
And was the trial in Mexico or United States?
It was actually in Texas, Brownsville, Texas.
Okay.
And the jury was, selected from Brownsville people who were not very savvy on medical issues, and they easily succumbed to the government's arguments. But I thought that Jimmy Keller was his name, and I interviewed all his patients. They all just loved him, thought he was doing, he really did have a remarkable record. He said, I want a jury of my peers, which would be a jury of doctors, because they would be able to recognize what great results he had. But anyway, in the course of that, I could see that the pharmaceutical industry and the banking industry were the same thing. I mean, it went back to a Rockefeller cartel, and that if you really wanted to fix the problem, you really had to fix the banking problem. It was through money that they got their power, and that if we wanted to get the power back, we needed to get the power to create our own money back. And to right now, our money is issued by banks. Most people don't realize that. Most people think it's the government that issues the money. But in fact, well over 90% of the money supply is created by banks when they make loans. The Bank of England has acknowledged that, I think, because they got a lot of pressure from the money reformers over many years. So they are creating the money supply. We know the Federal Reserve is creating trillions of dollars, but they're using it to usurp the banks and the financialized economy, the stock market, the big corporate interests. They are not using it for us. So we need to turn the whole system into a public utility, and that's basically what I wrote about in that book. That's my third book on banking.
There's right at the beginning in the introduction, one of my favorite quotes. I love to use this so many times, and I want to know why you chose it for the beginning of your book. It's from the Declaration of Independence. All experience has shown that mankind is more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Why did you include that?
Well, that was in the Declaration of Independence. And Jefferson went on to say, now we're at the point where they're not really sufferable anymore, and we really have to change our system. And that is where we are today. And when I wrote that, it was a year ago, or when it was published, it was a year ago. And even then, we had all sorts of revolutions going on around the world, or protests, people objecting to their current money system and wanting some change. And now it's blatantly obvious that we're at the edge of some sort of major change in our money system. The globalists, as they're called, or whoever you want to call them, used to be the Rothschild Rockefeller cartel, then it became the New World Order, and now all of a sudden it's called the Great Reset. But they're pushing for changing the whole global system in the direction of a one world government and one world currency, and that we all have to follow in lockstep. But the problem is these will not be elected representatives. These will be unelected bureaucrats, technocrats that are doing, you know, they're appointed because of their alleged expertise. But anyway, they're not representing us. So
And the connection, they're appointed because they're connections too, because they're friends of, you know, whatever, the banks or whatever. Why is it not sufferable anymore?
Today?
Yeah.
This whole pandemic, it's, as it's often called, is destroying our global economy. And whether that was the argument is that this is due to a virus, but there is certainly plenty of evidence that it's being manipulated for the use of the big moneyed interests. And they are planning to change our system. So we definitely need to get in there and make sure that the changes are in the direction of serving the public and serving our local businesses, our local economy. We really have two economies, and right now the money power is being used to serve the financialized economy at the expense of the real economy. It's exploiting the real economy. It's a parasite on the real economy.
Well, go into more that those two economies, or people who are listening, define those so in people so they can understand a little better.
Okay, so the real economy is where products are sold, consumers, it's the consumer producer economy. So it's what you call the Main Street economy. And the financialized economy is money making money. They don't really produce anything. It's the stock market. People think that if they put their money in the stock market, they're actually helping business, but they're not. That if you buy stocks, you're buying it from the previous seller of the stock. The money does not go to that company. So it really is a giant casino, and the people who are in the know manage to exploit these crises, you know, booms and busts. They know when it's going to bust. And so they have money kept on the sidelines, and then they can buy up all the distressed houses, foreclosed homes, etc., and rent them back to the people that used to live them in them at inflated prices. And that's the cycle that we keep going through that's called the business cycle or the boom and bust cycle. But we don't have to have that, but it's a function of how our money system works. I could go into that in more detail, but naturally.
Well, let me ask. Yes, let's do. But let me ask you one question about producer and consumer before we get off this. When I think of producer consumer in America, traditionally, I mean, that's been like a farmer. To me, the ultimate producer in America is a farmer. That's where you eat. That's where the rubber meets the road in this country. And I've always been puzzled. The farmers have all the power. They are the ones that actually produce something. The farmer, you know, the banks are not out there growing, you know, corn, even non-GMO corn. They're not doing it. The farmer is. But the farmer then gets manipulated by the banking and the middleman interest to where the farmer gets marginalized and all their crops get derivatized to where they're manipulated and controlled by the financial. I've always been so puzzled. Why don't the producers, why don't these farmers get together and tell all these little parasites just to get lost? I've always wondered that. It's kind of a metaphor for America, really. But anyway, any comment about that?
Yeah, well, farmers have a big lobby, but they are the agribusiness, and those are the ones that are taking over the little farmers. We do have a very good model in North Dakota in 1919 when the farmers were being, they were in their own sort of depression, and they were losing their farms to the big out-of-state banks. And so they got together, did have a revolution, and set up their own public bank, the Bank of North Dakota. So that's our one and only state-owned bank. It's been around for 100 years. It's an excellent model. And they manage through that to keep their money in the state. Right now what happens is the big banks are in Wall Street or generally out of state. And so your money goes to them, but it doesn't come back. They don't reinvest in our local communities. So we really need our own public banks to invest in our communities.
Well, okay, explain here. Okay, another one of the quotes that you have in your book is you start getting into the chapters. And I love this quote, and I want you to explain this. We are completely dependent upon the commercial banks. Someone has to borrow every dollar we have in circulation, cash, or credit. If the banks create ample synthetic money, we are prosperous. If not, we starve. Robert Hemphill, credit manager of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. That was from 1934. Explain that, and how does that relate to what we're talking about here?
Yeah, that was in the Great Depression. And then and now, banks create money when they make loans. Most people think that they lend their deposits, but they don't. They actually just write the loan money into the account. And that when the borrower pays their seller, whatever, let's say it was for a mortgage or for a house, the borrower pays the seller. If the seller's in another bank, that's when the first bank has to come up with liquidity to cover the loan. But if they have deposits coming in equal to their deposits going out, then the books balance and they don't really have to do anything. So they're really sort of recycling borrowed money. Well, anyway, so imagine this example. Say you have Bank A creates a $500,000 mortgage. The $500,000 check goes into Bank B. Now, technically, Bank A should come up with $500,000. But if Bank B, at the same time, creates a mortgage for $500,000 and the check finds its way into Bank A, they both have $500,000 coming in, $500,000 going out, their books balance, and they don't have to do anything. But $1 million is now out there that wasn't there before. That money is circulating in the economy. It can be spent. And that's where our money comes from. So money is created and destroyed all day, every day. People think of it as being a fixed sum that the government maybe issues or the central bank issues. And we have to worry about, you know, if you have the government issue some extra, maybe that'll be inflationary. But we've got inflation going on all the time. And right now we have deflation going on, radical shrinking of the money supply.
You said something that I don't know if people understand. I think it's extremely important. Are you familiar with the Walker Todd affidavit where
I remember it. I wrote about it, but it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, basically he was in court. I think it was in Minneapolis. I think it was in Minnesota, I believe. But the judge in that case ended up getting killed. I mean, that's how serious this was. And see, now I'm trying to remember the details.
I think it was about the banks creating money, right?
Right. It was a mortgage. Yeah. It was a mortgage lawsuit. They had somebody that was high up in the banks and they got him on the stand to ask him, well, how is money created? And in affidavit form, he says exactly what you said. Well, does the bank loan the money? No. Does the bank come up with the money? No. Well, how is the money created? Well, when the people sign the mortgage, as soon as they sign the mortgage, that triggers and then the money is created out of thin air with their signature on the bank. So then the bank is a third party. It's a third party investment contract that the bank is a custodian of. The bank has no interest in the game. Okay. When they said that, the judge let this all go and the judge was killed. Walker Todd affidavit, you can look it up. This was a few years ago. It was easy to find. Now, like a lot of things, it's hard to find on the internet. I mean, the amount of censorship and scrubbing this information is difficult. Explain to people again, let's not gloss over this. People think when they go to borrow our money to go buy their car, they go to the bank. Please explain this. The bank is not loaning them money. Please make that clear to people. And what are they doing?
Okay. When you sign a mortgage, the bank is basically guaranteeing your own credit. So if you tried to write an IOU out to the seller, that the seller's not going to take it because they don't know you and they don't know how to, you know,
Who are you? Right, whatever.
So you go to the bank and the bank will take your IOU. That's what the mortgage is. It's a promise to pay over time, like 30 years plus interest. They'll take it because you're going to pay them some interest. They know where to find you. They've got the collateral of the house if you don't pay. So they're sitting pretty. So they're happy to take your IOU. So really, the bank is turning your IOU into something that